This evening we'll start in the book of 1 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 16. And already this week we saw on Wednesday evening, complete warfare. We went to 2 Corinthians chapter 10, the first six verses, and we saw a tendency that we might have to develop strongholds in our thinking, justifications, rationales, reasonings that are in fact contrary to God's word. And the need to deconstruct those, to tear those down, as Paul said, so that we can think biblically, we can think correctly. And then last night from Ephesians chapter 4, we saw the complete body, how that the membership is to be unified on the basis of the truth, the foundation of the truth, manifesting love in that unity, that every member is gifted of God to serve Him in the context of that local church. That God gives to the local church the leadership that it needs and even sends out from that church leadership to other areas. And as we looked at all that together with the objectives, we realized that what that meant is what we realized is that the body functions well to the extent that its members are functioning well. And so we considered that question, how are we functioning as a local church member in the areas of going and praying and giving? Well, this evening we're going to be a little bit more focused in our subject, and we're going to consider complete giving. We've seen complete warfare, the complete body. This evening we're going to consider complete giving. As a part of this conference, we are considering what we're going to do by way of missions in the upcoming year. It is a time when this local church gets together and its membership expresses itself as to what each member anticipates doing for missions in that upcoming year. And as such, it certainly is pertinent then to get back into the Scriptures and to remind ourselves what the Scriptures say concerning giving. So we'll start in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, and we'll look at the first six verses. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. And when I come, whomsoever ye shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. And if it be meet that I go also, they shall go with me. Now I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia, for I do pass through Macedonia, and it may be that I will abide, yea, and winter with you, that ye may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. So the Apostle Paul, in concluding this first letter to the Corinthian church, he is speaking of an offering that he was taking up for the Jerusalem church. The problem that was there at the Jerusalem church was a problem of famine. The entire area, Jerusalem area, Judea, had fallen under a famine, and the need, the physical need of the people in the Jerusalem church was great. And so Paul wanted to take up an offering from other churches to meet that specific need. This becomes a model for us as to what we should be doing by way of missions. It certainly would seem that Paul's offering was not specifically a faith promise type of offering, yet it does become for us a model. Because what we have here are a number of local churches that are deciding to work together, as it were, in the financial support for a specific objective. Now we as well, we have the need to get the gospel around the world. We have the need to send missionaries. And so as in this way, local churches now band together with this common financial goal of getting missionaries to the field. And so the Apostle Paul spoke of this, and he encouraged this church, first day of the week, Sunday, put the money specifically aside for this objective so that when I come, it's already in place. Now, let's be clear, this was not the tithe. This was not what these members were to be giving as a tithe for the support and for the financial well-being of their own local church. This was in addition to that. And so here was where Paul spoke of it. Now, if you would go with me to the book of 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians and we'll look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 4, starting in verse 2, 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Starting in verse 2, we'll start with verse 1. Actually, moreover, brethren, we do to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power, they were willing of themselves, praying with us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And this they did, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God, insomuch that we desired Titus, that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you that same grace also. Therefore, as ye abound in everything, in faith, in utterance, and knowledge, and in all diligence, and in your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also. And so the Apostle Paul, now writing back to the church at Corinth, he is explaining to them that the Macedonian churches have already gotten involved with this offering. And it's interesting because the reason why, as we'll see, the reason why the Macedonian churches got involved with this offering is because they heard the Corinthian church was involved in the offering. When the news came to the Macedonian churches, such as Thessalonica and Philippi, when that news arrived that Paul was taking up this offering and the Corinthian church had committed to being involved in that offering, the Macedonian churches said, well, if the Corinthian church is going to do that, then we would like to do it as well. But let's see what happened. Go with me to chapter 9, 2 Corinthians chapter 9, and we'll start in verse 1. For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. For I know the frowardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia, and of course Achaia was the province where we found the city of Corinth, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf, that as I said, ye may be ready. Lest happily, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we, that we say not ye, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof ye had noticed before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not as of covetousness. But this I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he that soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye, always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. So what is the Apostle Paul saying now to the church? He's saying, you committed a year ago to this offering. The Macedonia churches heard that you committed, and they were encouraged by that, and so they committed to give to this offering. And the fact of the matter is, the Macedonia churches have given for this offering. But as I write this letter unto you at this point in time, you have given nothing. And as such, the Apostle Paul was embarrassed for them and began to take measure so that this church could get together and could have something given before the representatives of Macedonia came through on their way to Jerusalem to deliver this money to Jerusalem. So we have the example of these two churches, let's say, the Corinthian church in Achaia, and what's referred to as the churches in Macedonia. And again, we know that that would certainly include Thessalonica, that would include as well Philippi and perhaps others. So the Macedonian churches, what do we observe from them? Well, in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, in verses 1 through verse 7, we saw that, first of all, they gave themselves. They recognized that their service to the Lord was not simply a service of putting money in the offering plate. They recognized that their responsibility to their church was more than simply warming a pew and putting money in the offering plate. They recognized that giving financially was part of their expression of giving their entire selves to God. They recognized that they belonged to him. They recognized that they had been bought with a price. They recognized that the Lord Jesus Christ was now the Lord of their life, and it was necessary to give all of themselves to him. And of course, that would include as well their financial giving. We see as well in verse 2 that they gave in their poverty. Their first thoughts were not to their savings account. Their first thoughts were not necessarily to what was transpiring in their life financially. They did not allow poverty to hinder them. They knew that God was giving them the money that he was giving to them, and if God wanted them to contribute to this offering, then he would supply those funds that were necessary. So poverty was not a hindrance to them. They moved forward by faith and gave as God wanted them to do, recognizing that God would certainly fulfill things on his end. We see as well in verse 2 that they gave joyfully and voluntarily. At various times in my life, I found those principles rather insulting. All right, God, if you're going to require me to give this money, fine, I'll give it. But why do I have to like it? Why do I have to be joyful about it? And it was the Lord's way of saying, listen, son, if you're not joyful about it, then don't give it. All right? Work on the joy part first and get that down. And then through that, give unto the Lord. And so that's this Macedonian church was an example of that. And as well, they gave according to the need, as we see in verse 3. Yea, and beyond their power, they were willing of themselves. They looked to the need to determine how they should give. So we have here in chapter 8 an excellent example with these Macedonian churches. And we'll look at some principles in a minute that we glean from them. Now the reality is the Corinthian church is not or was not an example for us. The reality is the Corinthian church was a very wealthy church. Corinth at this point in time was the fourth largest city in the world. And it was a city through which many of the trade routes passed. So lots of buying, lots of selling taking place in the city of Corinth. It was a luxurious city. It was also an exceedingly sinful city. To refer to somebody as a Corinthian was not a compliment. It generally seemed to imply some type of deviousness on the part of that person. And as such, the Corinthian church was a very problematic church, as we mentioned on Wednesday evening. There was sexual sin that was unchecked in that city. And then once that sin had been taken care of, the church lacked forgiveness. People within the church using a pagan judicial system to settle the problems between them. There were Gnostic tendencies causing them to ignore sins committed with the body. There were marriage problems, clearly, amongst the membership of this church. There was division over what to do with meat that was offered to idols. There were certain idolatrous tendencies that had clung with certain members of this church. There was abuse of the gifts in the assembly. There was a smearing of the distinction between male and female. There was an abuse of the Lord's Supper. There was a lack of love demonstrated. There was false doctrine concerning the resurrection. All this which we see from the first chapter of 1 Corinthians, from the book of 1 Corinthians. And so it was a church that had many problems in spite of the wealth that they had as a church. And in spite of the fact that Paul had spent 18 months with them in founding that church, which only Ephesus really received more of Paul's time than Corinth did. And so we have these two churches now as an example. We have the Macedonia churches, and we have this Corinthian church. And as we look at those two, and as we see how Paul is comparing these two churches, I think it's easy for us to determine which church we would like to emulate. I mean, my bet is if we were to take a poll amongst the membership this evening, we would find that there really is not any good member of the Central Baptist Church that would say, I think our church should be like the Corinthian church. You know, it's funny, for years as I would travel in the United States, I would make note of the fact that I've seen various independent Baptist churches in the United States named after various churches that we find in the New Testament record, but that I had never seen a Corinthian Baptist church, and then I did see one eventually, so I had to retract that. But I'm not sure I would join there, simply because, again, it should not be our desire to emulate the Corinthian church. But as we see the problems there and as we see the good response on the part of the Macedonian churches, what can we learn from that? And that's what we'll see as we go towards the end of the message this evening. Six principles that we can keep in mind concerning this giving. The first is the tithe is God's, and that is not optional. God, throughout all of history, has funded His work through the tithe of His people. It was that way before the law. It's that way after the law. It's simply the manner that God has done it. Jesus commended the Pharisees for having tithed, and He certainly would not have done that if He was in a process of transitioning away from a tithe. And so we recognize that God still funds His local churches through the tithes of the membership of that church. And God blesses that. You know, in the Ivory Coast, when we founded the church in the year 2000, the church in Bangerville, when we founded that church in the year 2000, and I continued to work with that church, at the beginning, it was so difficult for me to teach on giving. Because I knew what their life was like. I knew what they were earning. I knew where they lived. I'd visited them. And I knew how difficult things were for them. And I felt so self-conscious getting up and speaking of tithing and speaking of giving. And I certainly covered those subjects as fulfilling my responsibility, but I did so with such timidity and really hoping to just push on to something else as quickly as I possibly could. And when I took my first furlough after starting the Bangerville Church, the Lord really began to impress on me the fact that, sure, their life is difficult. And absolutely sure, it's much more difficult than mine. But I was withholding from them what they needed to know in order to get out of that circumstance in life, in order to have more blessing from God in their life. If I would go back and be firm about this thing of tithing to the church and be firm about faith promise missions giving, that would raise them up out of that circumstance if they were obedient children of God. And so as we returned, I took that so much more seriously, and I invited a lot of our national pastors to come in and teach and preach on the subject of tithing and subject of giving so that our people could grasp that. And right in the midst of that, one Sunday morning, there was one of the ladies in our church. She said, "Pastor, I'd like to give a testimony." I said, "Okay." So she came up, and her name was Bridget. And Bridget said, "Pastor, a number of years ago, I got a job working in a medical laboratory. I had just graduated from college with a degree in medical administration, and I had gone everywhere to try to find a job, which is a common problem in our country, in the Ivory Coast. I'd gone everywhere to try and find a job, and finally this guy at a medical laboratory, he hired me, but he told me, he said, 'I can't guarantee that you'll still be employed here in 6 months. We're going to give you a salary of 150,000 francs a month, which is about $300. And we'll probably never be able to raise that salary. But if you can agree to that, then you can work here.' And so she said, 'Fine.' So she started working there. And after her first month, she received her salary, 150,000. And her boss gave it to her. And apparently her boss had gone to the bank to get the money because he gave Bridget 15 10,000 franc bills in pristine condition. She'd never seen money looking that good. And the reality is the Ivorians are kind of known for abusing their currency. You know, typically the bills that we work with there are pretty ratty, but here she had received 15 10,000 franc bills, and they were in pristine condition, 150,000 franc. Now, she knew her tithe would be 15,000 franc. But she also knew if she took one of those 10,000 franc bills and went somewhere to break it to where she would have two 5,000 franc bills, that inevitably those two 5,000 franc bills would be ratty. And she was so impressed with the condition of the 10,000 franc bills, she said, "You know what? I would rather give two 10,000 franc bills to the Lord that are in such good condition than to break one of them and give a 5,000 franc bill that wasn't good." So she did. She just, "That's what I'm going to do. I want to give the best to God." So she gave 20,000 franc. Well, the next month rolls around and she's paid, and it's like, well, if I gave 20,000 last month, then I can hardly drop back to 15,000 this month. So for the first 6 months, she gives 20,000 franc to the Lord every month as a tithe to her church. After 6 months, she got a raise to 200,000 francs. And when she was paid 200,000 francs the first time, she said, boy, I just felt convicted. If when I received 150, I gave 20, then now that I'm receiving 200,000, I can't just continue to give 20. So she started giving 30. And after 6 months, she got a raise. And now within a year, she's earning twice what she started with. She's earning 300,000 francs. And again, she said, well, if when I earned 200,000, I gave 30, I can't stay with 30 now. So she started giving 40,000 francs to the Lord. And after 6 months, that medical lab, which had prospered greatly, and I believe because she was working there and because she was faithful to the Lord, that business was able to give her a scholarship to get a much higher degree to where today she works for the country of the Ivory Coast in their Ministry of Health. The Lord greatly blessed her. God expects that we give our tithe to our church. I exercise that. I'm a member of the Cleveland Baptist Church. And as I'm working out there in the Ivory Coast, I am faithful to return my tithe to my local church. So that's principle number one. Principle number two, give of yourself. And we touched on this briefly. In all honesty, it is senseless to give if we have not completely surrendered to God. So we give our tithe to the Lord because He's absolutely expecting that. We view that as a requirement from the Scriptures. Now, what we give beyond that tithe is optional. That is voluntary. That is of our choice and of our decision. But you know, sometimes there are folks whom the Lord has blessed financially, and you can sort of sense when you're talking with them that they're doing a little deal-making with God. Maybe if they put this much money as a tithe and this much money to Faith Promise Missions or to something else, some other financial need of the church, then maybe that relinquishes them from their responsibility to really serve the Lord in other areas. And we saw with the Macedonian church that just simply is not the case. Our financial giving is one part of a comprehensive whole, and the entire comprehensive whole is to be given to God. He's to be the Lord of every facet of our life. He's to be the determining factor of every decision that we're making. And so we recognize that when we speak of giving, we give our tithe to our local church, and we recognize as well that we give of our entire self to God through service to our local church. I remember, I believe it was Wednesday night, I mentioned how often we hear today where somebody says, well, you know, I was a member of this church, but we left there because we just didn't feel like we were getting our needs met. You know, our children were getting into the youth group, and the youth group didn't seem that strong, and so on and so forth. And so we left to find a church maybe that met our needs a little bit better. And I think that's a distorted way of thinking. If your local church had a need, why didn't you work to fill that need? Why didn't you get a youth group going? Why didn't you develop that? Again, membership in a local church is not a question of what that church is going to do for me. Membership in a local church is, what am I going to do for God through the ministry of this local church? That's the question. And so again, we must recognize when we speak of giving that financial giving is one part of a comprehensive whole. And what the Lord is seeking is that we give of our entire selves so that the finances that we do decide to give, that those finances be birthed from that decision. So the tithe is the Lord's, first of all, and secondly, we give of our entire selves. Thirdly, let's look at verse 3 again. For to their power, chapter 8, verse 3, for to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves. How? What is it that the Apostle Paul is saying there? You know, again, normally when we talk about an offering for something, whether faith promise or something else, again, our tendency is to consider what we might be capable of doing at that point in time. But maybe it would be better to consider the actual need. You know, each year as my church, the Cleveland Baptist Church, comes to this time of missions conference, what I'm interested in doing is finding out what goal are we setting as a church, how much would we like to give to missions in the upcoming year, and then dividing that by the number of our members who really are earning wages and can contribute to that Faith Promise program. Because what that indicates to me is what my portion might be. See, that way I'm giving considering the need. If my church is going to meet this goal, then this is what, by average, I would have to contribute in order to meet that goal. And I use that as a starting point for determining what God would have me do by way of Faith Promise missions. Now, again, and I'm sure your pastor is in agreement with this, when we talk about Faith Promise missions, we're not talking about you coming and signing over your paycheck to the church every week. You have needs. You have to eat. You have to lodge yourself, clothing and everything. And God has provided work for you so that you can meet those needs. We're not being radical about what we're saying, but yet we do have discretionary funds. We do have some that's a little bit beyond what our needs are. And the question is, what are we doing with those funds? And do we tend to look at our current circumstance more than considering the actual need that is being presented? You know, the Ivorians really are the ones that really instructed me a little bit in this area, because I remember when we started our Faith Promise Missions program there in 2007, and we set a goal for our first year. And one of the men in the church that was really involved in serving the Lord walked up to me and said, "Well, Pastor, it's an easy thing to do. Let's take that goal and divide it by the members and tell everyone that's what they have to give." And I said, "Well, I understand what you're saying there. That's not what we're going to do, because God doesn't deal in specific amounts. He deals in proportions, and He knows what each of us have, and He knows what each of us is capable of doing, and some people are more capable than others, and so we have to take all that into consideration." But as I reflected on what he said, I really began to realize maybe that's what we should do, just to have an idea of what my part would be, of what I would do to help meet the need. And then with that figure, seek the Lord as to what precisely He would have me to do. So again, we see that the tithe is the Lord. Secondly, we see that we give of our entire self first. Third, we consider giving according to the need. Fourth is the principle of sowing and reaping, as we saw in chapter 9 and verse 6. "But this I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully." Now, this is a very easy concept, but it might be just as easy for us to ignore it or to neglect it. The Lord Jesus Christ in Luke chapter 6 and verse 38 talks about how when we give as the Lord wants us to give, He gives back to us. Pressed down, overflowing, so many adjectives in that verse. I remember when I was in college, there was a pastor that came in to preach. Paul Vanneman was his name. Man, could that guy preach with power. And I remember him hitting Luke 6:38 and leaning so far over that pulpit and looking at us and says, "Young people, do you know what that means?" He says, "That means you're gonna get it back the way you dished it out." And then step back, and I remember having the feeling that my tie was flapping behind me as I was sitting there listening to him preach. But I guess that really is the conclusion. And we can understand that that's the conclusion. Yet I think this principle may stretch our faith more than any other. But let's recognize that God will mirror towards us the attitude that we have towards giving. That's what he's saying. So we must recognize this principle of sowing and reaping, and we must recognize that it is a faith principle. And that principle gets exercised as we go through year after year of Faith Promise giving. This church, as long as I've been your missionary, I believe it's been using Faith Promise. So 27 years there that I'm specifically aware of. What that means is each year we can consider doing more. I gave testimony again, I believe, Wednesday evening or perhaps last night concerning the founding pastor of Cleveland Baptist, Roy Thompson. How when he got to approximately 35 years of having served there as pastor, he mentioned that his faith promise was twice his tithe. And I was so amazed with that. But again, I realized, well, he didn't start that way. He started reasonably. And he gave what he could to faith promise. And the Lord blessed that. So the following year came, and he increased. And the Lord provided. And the Lord blessed him for that. So the following year, he increased. And we certainly recognize and understand that the way the economy works doesn't always mean that our intake economically is always on the rise. But I do think we'll find that if we are faithful to recognize this principle of sowing and reaping, God is faithful to us, even when our country is going through economic hard times, like I believe we very soon will be. So sowing and reaping is the fourth principle. Fifth, give with joy and voluntarily. And this seems as though it is pouring salt in the wound, as I mentioned earlier, because we recognize a biblical principle and we can bring ourselves to be obedient to that principle, but it's the liking it sometimes that makes it so difficult. But it's not that God is trying to be difficult with us. It's that God is bringing us to the right perspective on what He is expecting of us. If we believe that we're going to reap the way we sow, then why wouldn't we give with joy? Why wouldn't we give voluntarily? If we believe, Luke chapter 6 and verse 38, that God is going to give it back to us more than what we gave to Him, why would we not do that with joy? If we come to the faith promise thing and we decide, well, I got to give something because I'm a member here and I know I got to do this, and so we give, but it's grudgingly, it's almost as if we're giving, not recognizing the very principle for which we're supposed to give. So this principle of giving with joy and voluntarily. And lastly this evening, let's remember that it is God's money. We are not owners. We are stewards. We're managers. The money is not ours. The money is God's. It is not for us to decide what we do with our money. It is for God to decide what we do with our money. And again, we recognize that He has given us what He has given us so that we can take care of ourselves and we can take care of our family. We recognize that. But as well, the money that's left, the money that is discretionary in nature, it is His money. And yes, perhaps from time to time, He is interested in you investing that in yourselves. But from time to time, perhaps He's interested in you investing that into the ministry. And when He calls us to do that, then we should be quick to do that because it is, in fact, His. And so as we've seen this evening, we've looked at these principles. Paul presented this offering to the Corinthian church in Corinth, said, yeah, man, we're going to give. We're going to get involved. The Macedonian churches heard that the Corinthian church was going to get involved, and they said, well, if they're going to do it, we want to do it too. And then they did. And a year after they had given, Paul is having to come back to the Corinthian church and say, guys, listen up. We need to do something about this. You're about to embarrass yourselves. I'll get some people down there ahead of time, get this money put together so that when we all come through to go to Jerusalem, you will have given to this offering. But as we look at that in these two chapters, we can, in fact, come to these principles. Number one, we do recognize the tithe. We give the tithe to our local church for its financial well-being. Number two, we give of our entire selves. Number three, we give according to the need. Number four, we remember sowing and reaping. Number five, we give with joy and voluntarily. And number six, we remember that it is God's money anyway and that we are simply stewards of those funds. I'll pray to conclude and turn the service back over to Pastor Townsley. Thank you, Father, again.